The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. Thank you for listening to Audio Journal.
You are listening to the In Perspective weekly podcast with Bob Branco and Peter O'Toole.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to In Perspective. My name is Bob Branco. Glad to be with all of you today. This is episode 466, dated Friday, May 29th, 2026. Before we continue, allow me to introduce our good friend, colleague, and co-host, Peter O'Toole. Peter, what's going on?
We're in spring at Coos Bay, which means, you know, breeze, chilly, kind of cold, beautiful sun. Might get to 70 degrees, which for here is warm.
We are in the 60s today, cloudy. We're going to have a wind and rain event tomorrow, and temperatures are going to cool way down, only to rise up again later, though. Before we continue, let me thank those people who make it possible for In Perspective to be made available. We start out with Raymond Gay, our producer. Thank you for what you do for us. Our media sources, thank you as well for airing us. We appreciate all of that. Peter from Canada, thank you for posting our programs on my web, on your chat board. That's where you post our shows, on your chat board, Peter from Canada. Thank you. And of course, Jacqueline Sylvia from JS Web Solutions. Thank you for archiving our shows on my website. For those people who want to find the archives, they must go to www.brancoevents.com. Arrow down until you get to In Perspective Podcasts. Click on them, and you will see most of our archived programs from latest to earliest.
Merci, Jackie.
Let me also say hi to Trish, who is our host for today's show, along with Brad, who is our streamer. And because we are being streamed live, let me give out my email address for those people who would like to write to us here at In Perspective. It is bobbranco93@gmail.com. Bob Branco, B-O-B-B-R-A-N-C-O, 93@gmail.com. I also would like to say hi to four listeners to our program, Glenn Grimes, Becky Frankie Berger, Deborah Joyce, and Anthony Candela. Thank you very much for listening and for your support. We appreciate it very much. With us today, we have Caitlin Lee. She is the development officer with the American Council of the Blind. Caitlin, it's a pleasure having you on our program. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so, looking forward to our conversation today and so pleased to be a part of today's program.
Could you please tell the listeners, what is a development officer?
Sure. Yeah. So I work at the, with the resource development team at the American Council of the Blind. And, I also work with the, resource development committee and fundraising committee. And, what we do are, put on events, do fundraising, look after, cultivating donors and partnerships for the American Council of the Blind.
So, just to put this into like perhaps a bit crass terms, yeah. You're the chief money raiser for, in this case, American Council of the Blind, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And yes. It's not just fundraising campaigns. Mm-hmm. Although that's really important. It's also grant writing, right? Grant funding. Do you do that?
Yeah. Yeah, there's three main components. So, I would say there's grant writing, there's individual giving, and there's corporate giving. So, there's those three things. And I, in my role, I focus primarily on individual giving. So, donations from individuals.
So I am always curious when I come across people with sort of divergent, skill sets. And yeah. You seem to fall that category. You are a marathoner, mm-hmm. and you do this resource mm-hmm. officer stuff. Can mm-hmm. you talk about how the two came to be, and how you sort of use one to influence the other, or not, or something?
Yeah, you know, they haven't quite merged except, you know, more recently, but they've been pretty separate. So I've run a lot of marathons, and I've been running for a while now. But I, you know, there's a lot of things. There's tons of people who run who use that as a platform for fundraising. And for me, I really just focus on running. Whereas, you know, and then ACB is about, fundraising and relationships with donors and, with ACB members. And, so they're somewhat separate, but, you know, I see this opportunity right now, actually, with an event that ACB puts on annually at the convention, which is the Brenda Dillon Memorial, walk. And so, yeah, for the first time, I, sort of linked my running to the walk. And yeah, usually I don't incorporate, like I said, my own marathons with fundraising, but this is something that I think is a little bit different. I'm really excited about the walk. I don't know if anybody on this call has participated in the past or plans to participate. But yeah, I guess in terms of what you're asking, they're kind of separate for me, but I think there's a lot of potential and opportunities, especially right now. I have a bit more of a platform with my marathon running to be able to talk about ACB and the mission and how people can, help to contribute if they, you know, if they like me are passionate about ACB's mission.
Where have you run marathons?
Ooh, a lot of places actually. So, I most recently ran the Boston Marathon. That was my 10th marathon. But, I've run marathons in the US. I've run, in Berlin. I've run in London. Mostly, I guess, along the East Coast. I know that, Jose is listening, and he was talking about how he's running the Army half marathon. And I did run the Marine Corps marathon years ago. So that had a lot of vets, participating. I've run the New York City Marathon. So, yeah, a bunch of places, and I've run over 100 road races as well. So aside from the marathon distance, which is 26.2 miles, I've run, about 50 half marathons. I've run a lot of 5Ks, 10Ks, mile distances, all kinds of other races as well.
So you mentioned the Marine Marathon. Mm-hmm. Are you a Marine?
No. I have been legally blind since I was 16, so that would disqualify me from.
I would think it probably
serving. Yeah.
How did you get interested in the marathon? How did the whole process start?
Yeah. So as a kid, I have a genetic eye disease called Stargardt's, which causes blindness in my central vision. And so, like I said, I've been blind, legally blind, since I was 16. But I think probably before that, I was, you know, visually impaired and didn't know it. And so I was just so bad at every sport, but I was very active in sports. but I was constantly, just like a liability on the field and everywhere else. And I hated running as a kid because I saw myself as really unathletic, and I didn't start to love it until I was an adult. And I think once I had knowledge of my vision loss and how it was impacting me, it started to change my perspective on things. And I got into running in my 20s. Around when I was 30, I decided I wanted to run a marathon. I ran my first marathon when I was 31. And, and then I was totally hooked. I became a running coach. I have a couple of, coaching certifications. And I worked for, the organization that puts on the New York City Marathon, called New York Roadrunners, which is another nonprofit. And I was the director of operations there. So it also became, my career path.
So let's talk about your career path. So that's,
yeah.
So you're doing your running, you're working mm-hmm. with Roadrunners. How mm-hmm. did you move on from there to, the ACB job, American Council of the Blind job?
Yeah. So, I worked for New York Roadrunners for several years. Like I said, I worked in different roles in, runner services, and, I also managed the, New York Roadrunners Run Center, which is, it's basically a community center that focuses on running. But, under my time working there, we had about, 2000 events per, or we had about 2000 visitors per day and, about 1000 events per year. And those were everything from, a lot of fundraising events, actually. So that would be supporting New York Roadrunners and also, the New York Roadrunner charity team for kids. So I got a lot of experience during that time with, event planning and fundraising in that capacity. And then, I left that role and I focused on other endeavors. And then I started working at ACB, I guess about 10 months ago. Yeah. At the beginning of last August. So less than a year. I am still a newbie. This role came up for this development position. And this is my first time working at an organization, that is, blind led and with this specific mission. And that was something that was really important to me to work in this kind of environment. I think even though I've been legally blind since I was 16, I didn't really start identifying as a blind person and really saying that, and claiming that identity until I was almost 40 years old. So, and I'm 45 now. And I think I started to use a white cane and learn Braille and learn more about blind culture and really start to feel pride around that identity instead of, trying to hide it. And it really shifted focus for me. And so working at ACB has been such an amazing experience. It's such a great fit. I've learned so much, and it's actually how I became, a nationally, classified para athlete, which was how I was able to run the Boston Marathon. So all of this kind of ties in, but, starting to talk about my blindness and be, more open, has led to new opportunities, which is, you know, something that I would say to anyone who maybe is struggling with, vision loss, that, you know, that there might feel like a loss, but also there's so much to be gained as well.
So, Caitlin, you mentioned, I'm sorry, Peter, Caitlin, you mentioned the ACB walk, and I know one is coming up. You can talk about that a little bit if you want. And also, I'm just curious, what is the distance of that walk?
So before you go there, Caitlin, be aware that a good chunk of our audience doesn't know what ACB even is.
Sure.
So you might want to sort of start. I don't know where you want to start, but just talk in general terms of what the walk does and what its purpose is.
Sure. Yeah. So, ACB, the American Council of the Blind, is a nonprofit organization, and every year there is the ACB National Convention. So this year it's being held in July. So there's a virtual convention and then an in-person convention, which is happening in St. Louis. We're really excited about this location. And, part of, the convention is, there's so many different activities, but one of the things happening that has been happening annually is the Brenda Dillon Memorial Walk. And We're really excited. The walk has been going on for a while now, but this year it will be the March of the Arch. So the St. Louis Arch, which is really exciting. The distance, I believe, is, about a mile. So it should be, you know, there's a lot of different people who are working on this who are really concentrating on making it accessible for everyone who wants to participate. So I know, for instance, they were finding a location where there will be benches along the route, because we know that St. Louis can be, you know, pretty hot in July. So that's also being taken into consideration. But I know last year that the walk happened indoors and people are really excited about getting back outside. And I'm also happy to, you know, talk to anybody. I know there's people who are starting to get out and walk right now so that they can feel ready to, participate in this year's Brenda Dillon Memorial Walk. And if you go to the ACB website, which is acb.org, you can donate, or you can even create your own walk team if you want to. You can join a team that already exists. So there's a lot of different ways to participate. And again, you can participate virtually or you can participate in person if you're attending the convention.
So I just signed up for it yesterday. I will be part of the march.
Yes.
I will be there.
So Caitlin, who is Brenda Dillon?
Yeah, so she was an ACB, a very active ACB member. And, I probably both of you know way more about her or maybe knew her, in person. I only know, her legend and her memory. But she was really involved with advocacy, and this is a walk to honor her.
So I want to go back to something you talked about, because it's a pattern that a lot of us disabled folks go through, where we start, in your case, doing sort of mainstream work, you know, working in an organization that focuses on something that's not disability related. And then over time, we sort of move into sort of the disability realm, either professionally or volunteer-wise or whatever. And I'm curious if you could share how that happened for you. You know, you clearly started, you know, in this Roadrunners job and did other things. And then you mentioned, how the ACB was really important for you and, you know, working for, an organization of blind people, serving blind people. Can you share a little about that journey, how that journey happened for you?
Yeah. So, I have done so many different things throughout my, professional life. When I was an undergrad, I majored in, English and women's studies, and I thought I would go on to, grad school. I'm a pretty academic person. But I've been struggling for so long with, keeping up and sort of that thing that so many, visually impaired and low vision people struggle with, which is reading. And so I just was kind of I didn't have a really good grasp of how I would get the accommodations that I would need to be successful in grad school. And I was successful in undergrad, but it was, it kind of took every ounce of energy and everything that I had. And, after that, after school, I started working at a yoga center. And I was the manager of, student services for one of the largest yoga centers in the Washington DC area at the time. And quickly I was, I really love this. I love the physical aspect of this. I love how, I can listen to a really good yoga instructor and I don't have to ever, see what's really happening. And when you have a really good instructor, they can kind of show you, where to place your hands, your feet, or talk you through a pose. And so that was something that I wanted to do. So I got my yoga teacher certification, and I actually taught a lot in federal office buildings. That was kind of, aside from teaching at yoga studios, I taught at like the Department of Transportation and the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission and the NOAA, like the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, all these different government organizations. They needed yoga. So I would go teach during lunch breaks or after work at their, you know, if they had a fitness center. And it was interesting because I would have yoga students who had different disabilities, and I'd have to, you know, accommodate to their needs. And that was such a learning experience for me to have students have this conversation that was happening all the time in class. And then I moved to New York, and I did a lot in retail and fashion, and worked with clients and did sales things. And then, like I said, I fell in love with running and became a running coach. And so there was just like this whole trajectory. But a lot of the jobs that I had some really amazing jobs, and I also had workplaces that weren't very friendly or welcoming to people with disabilities. And it was really hard because I felt like I couldn't ask for the accommodations that I needed. I felt like I couldn't be myself at work often. And I was really struggling with, I knew that I had a lot of skills, a lot of knowledge. But it was really hard to implement things when, I just always felt a little bit like I was going home and, you know, working hours extra and doing more than, what the job really needed. It was so hard to balance certain things. So it was really great. Even for instance, like one of the things about working at the American Council of the Blind that I like is there's a policy, for all of our work meetings that the Zoom cameras are off. And that is really important as somebody who can't really see what is happening during a Zoom meeting, to not have to spend a lot of energy worrying about, what's happening on the screen. I can just focus on what is being said during the meeting, taking notes. I can focus on my work and I don't have to be pretending. And I know that probably some people who are listening to this podcast can relate to that too. Maybe I've been to so many different PowerPoint presentations. I've given so many PowerPoint presentations where I couldn't see what I was even presenting, but I had to pretend like I could for the sighted people in the room. And it was so important for me to make those sighted people feel comfortable. And that took precedence over asking for what I needed in the workplace. So I think there's something really, to be said for working in an organization that, prioritizes that.
Yeah, no, that's an interesting issue. You know, the idea of, trying so hard to please others that you can't get, it's harder for you to ask for what you need to be more effective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So getting back to the marathoning for a second, you mentioned that you've done marathons in foreign countries. I think you said London and Berlin,
Yeah.
Britain and Germany. That can cost lots of money, right? You know, to travel and to do whatever you need to do to be successful there. Do you fundraise for that purpose? And if so, how, and how does that work?
I don't. I would say that, that is probably the biggest thing that it is the biggest thing that I spend my money on is, it's something that I feel passionate about. So, every dollar I earn basically is going back into running. One thing, I'll just self-promote here shamelessly, but, I've won for the first time prize money, which I was excited about because I was like, oh, this will actually pay back for the money that, went into this race. But I, I ran and won the Boston Marathon, my last marathon in April. I came in first place in the T13 division. Mm-hmm. What's that?
This year?
This year, yeah, yeah.
I thought I heard your name while I was listening to the Red Sox. Oh, Caitlin Lee won the women's. Oh,
yes, yes.
Now, what did you actually win? The women's what?
So I race as a para athlete. So it's part of the National Paralympic Committee. So basically, to qualify for the Boston Marathon, I had to run a qualifying time, which I did at the Berlin Marathon. And then I also had to be classified as under the National Paralympic Committee. So I classified as a T13 athlete. So basically, my doctor had to, verify that I meet the medical standards of, blindness for that division. And, I won first place, which is shocking because I am not young, and but it actually just speaks a lot to the lack of opportunity for people to run marathons, for people who are blind or visually impaired to run marathons, that I won. I don't want to disqualify. I do think I'm a good runner, but I think that there's a lot of room to create more opportunities for people to run. I loved right before getting on here the chat with people in Clubhouse. I know there's runners listening right now, and I am just such a cheerleader, advocate for people getting involved in sports and running specifically. And I hope that I can answer any questions or help to assist people with getting involved with.
So for clarity, you won the women's division generally, correct? Not no. Special.
No, for para athletes, for the
para,
T13.
Okay, could you define more clearly what a para athlete is?
Sure. Yeah. So I would say, when you're, for instance, watching the Olympics, following the Olympics are the Paralympics, and Paralympics, are the Olympic events, but, with people who have disabilities, and there's different classifications. So similarly, I am a nationally classified para athletes. So the National Paralympic Committee has these classifications, so I fall under one of those classifications for someone who is blind, the T13 classification, and I was able to race under that classification. So and when you're watching a marathon, you'll see like the elite professional runners. You'll also see professional athletes who are in wheelchairs and hand cycles. And then there are also other para athletes who might be amputees or like me, be blind or have another disability that would qualify them to race as a para athlete.
So it sounds like you sort of won, this sounds like kind of crude, the fastest visually impaired runner in the Boston Marathon. Is that a woman?
Yes, exactly. Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So
that's what I
meant. How's your life change? You said you were surprised when you won that prize. What's changed since then, if anything?
Yeah. So, opportunities, basically. I didn't know that I think my big takeaway is that you always think that everyone's doing what you're doing. Like, for instance, podcasting. You all have a podcast, right? And it seems like everybody has a podcast, but everyone does not have the In Perspective podcast, right? Like, what you're doing is very specific, and you have a very specific audience, and what you're doing is special and unique, and no one else is doing it the way that you all are doing it, right? Like, podcasting the way you do it is very specific. And I think for me, I have worked in the running industry for a long time. And so I'm surrounded by runners. So I have this assumption, oh, everyone's a runner or everyone's running marathons. And the fact is that less than 1% of the general population ever runs a marathon. It's a very small percentage. Not everyone's running a marathon. So that's just me. I just think everyone is. And then of blind people, it's only about 50 to 100 people who are blind who run a marathon every year. And most of them were at the Boston Marathon. So all of a sudden I realized, oh wow, I'm one of the fastest blind women running marathons. And that is wild because, like you were saying, trying to figure that out, like I would think, you know, somebody in their 20s would be, you know, racing at that level, not somebody who's, you know, a middle age. I'm 45, you know, so I think that is really surprising. But yeah, some of the opportunities are, for instance, getting to run other marathon majors. So I didn't know that I could qualify or that I was fast enough to be doing that. And yeah, actually in a few weeks, I'll be running the Boston Athletic Association 10K as a para athlete. So, I didn't expect at this point in my life to be able to race at a competitive level. And that is, yeah, it's exciting and it gives me a platform to be able to talk about, accessibility at these sorts of events, and how we can, create more opportunities for people who are blind and visually impaired.
So let's talk about that. I am surprised, no mm-hmm. disrespect of you, that you won this at 40 years old or 45.
45, yeah.
Yeah. You know, that's an impressive thing and I hope you're proud of it. And I certainly am, but how do we get younger people? You think there'll be younger people, as you said. What's preventing younger people from engaging in, I guess, marathon activities, but I guess sports in general?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of barriers. To be honest, I was the youngest person in my division. So that's the other thing. The other runners are, you know, exceptional athletes and super fast. And, you know, I hope that with age, I will get faster. but yeah, I do think that, you know, some of the issues are that there's not enough, just in the same way that when I was younger, I felt really discouraged. I didn't know that there were, in college, I just felt like there was no way I was going to be able to participate in sports. And not until recently in the last few years have I learned about things like, beat baseball or, blind tennis or goalball or any of these things.
Or bowling for that matter, right?
Or bowling. Yeah. There's so many different sports. So if you don't like running or maybe you like running, but you don't want to be only running, there's lots of sports that I definitely didn't know about. And I think I would have been participating in if I had known. And I hope actually to participate. I hope, that I'll be able to do all of those things, honestly. Cause I am a really sporty person, but I didn't see myself that way. I think people with, you know, vision loss a lot of times don't see themselves as having that. And, you know, there's so many things, whether it's, you know, at the gym, like, there's so many times where it's like, you know, you could maybe use a treadmill, but you need some assistance with it. And right. So having, you know, staff that's trained to be able to show you how to use it or to help you with turning it on or with the settings, or like I was mentioning earlier, but there's, organizations like, Achilles International or Team with a Vision, which are both organizations that provide, guides for people who want to start running or who are running. So that's really important. I live right now in a pretty, inaccessible part of Massachusetts. And I'm fortunate because my partner runs with me. So that, I have sort of a built-in guide, which is really nice that I'm in a relationship with somebody who is fast enough to be my guide. But yeah, it's hard sometimes, to find those resources. So,
I think there's a bigger challenge, which I'm thinking that you had mentioned, mm-hmm. which is how to get people started, right?
Yeah.
How to get a junior high blind kid. Mm-hmm. To the point where they can, oh, maybe I can be a decent athlete, whether mm-hmm. a wrestler mm-hmm. or a runner or whatever. Mm-hmm. How do we get there? Cause everything you're saying makes a whole lot of sense. But first thing, you got people interested, you know.
I had someone reach out to me recently who said, oh, this is amazing. Like seeing my Boston win and saying that, her son wanted to do cross country. He's entering middle school and she was scared to let him because of his vision loss. And, you know, there's also that too, that a lot of times parents will sort of put their own fear on their children. And the thing is that it's true. Like your child might fall or might, you know, something could happen. And also that can happen to any athlete at any time. You know, there's the risk of injury in sports and, you know, part of it is allowing your child to participate or, you know, maybe you have a friend, a spouse, a parent, somebody who wants to be active and you're afraid to let them because they might hurt themselves. And, you know, it's just sometimes, it's that communication of like encouraging them and letting them know that they can participate. And that's the thing. I mean, I've fallen. I have had injuries and then I think, you know what? Sometimes sighted people fall too. So yeah, it's part of it. I mean, you know, I think that's the athletes at the highest level. They're always sort of playing around with that, how far they can push themselves, without getting injured. And a lot of them do get injured because that's part of it. That's part of the sport.
It's a fascinating thing to watch. I have two, mm-hmm. 13-year-old step grandkids who are both, you know, not disabled mm-hmm. and they're quite talented soccer players. And mm-hmm. every day they come in and they talk about, you know, they hurt their ankle, they hurt this, mm-hmm. they hurt that, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and on one level, they're in pain. On another mm-hmm. level, it's kind of a badge of honor and they're mm-hmm. learning how to work through it. And it's mm-hmm. sort of a fascinating thing to watch and to try to support.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Go ahead. Bob, can we open up for questions?
We certainly can. So you are listening to In Perspective and our featured guest is Caitlin Lee, development officer with the American Council of the Blind and winner of the blind women's division of the Boston Marathon in 2026. Congratulations, by the way, Caitlin.
Thank you, Bob.
Trish, do we have any raised hands at this time?
We do. Our first one is actually Reverend Michael.
Ah, Reverend Michael from Texas.
Michael.
Go ahead, Reverend.
Michael, are you unmuted?
Well, I lowered his hand and I don't see it anymore.
There he is.
I was talking and wasn't unmuted. Hey, Caitlin.
Hi. Good. So good to hear your voice.
Yes. But, so you mentioned some organizations. You know, I'm one of those old runners, who can't run anymore, but I started running with the USABA. Are you familiar with that? United States Association of Blind Athletes.
Yeah.
That's where I started running doing, you know, around the states and those organizations, meets and playing goal ball, in that organization. But talk about, I don't know if I may have missed it, but talk about your training regimen, in order to get to being able to run 26.3 miles. That's a long way.
Thanks. Yeah. So I love running, and I also try to balance it with doing other activities as well. So one thing I really like that I think, if you have access to it at a gym, and I think is a great option for people who are blind or visually impaired, is spinning classes, or stationary bike. You can't get hit by a car. and it's fun, but that's one thing. I did that this morning, to kind of get my legs going and build some strength, but also to give my feet a rest. But yeah, I train a lot. I usually do, a long run, once a week. I do some speed workouts. This past winter, when I was training for Boston, I live in Massachusetts, and it was a terrible winter. It was really cold. It was really icy. It was really snowy. And my rule is, if there is ice on the grounds, then I do not run outside. Yeah. Because, like I said, there is potential to get injured, but I don't need to. I can still take precautions, and one of those is by running inside. So I did a lot of my running on the treadmill, most of my running on the treadmill, including long runs. So there were times where I would be on the treadmill for, you know, 3+ hours, with a really good playlist, and I really focused on, just embracing the boredom that comes with that, because during a marathon, you also get bored, your mind wanders, and it kind of like builds a little bit of mental strength. So yeah, but there's a lot of good training plans out there, or finding a running coach, or running, like I said, running with a team. I mean, Michael, I love that you suggested running, with the U.S. Blind Athletic Association. That's, or USABA, sorry.
Great.
I don't know a ton about the organization. I wish I did. I want to learn more. But yeah, that's another, yeah. But I think even, you know, whether you're running or walking, like, you know, I know people have walking pads at home, or, if you have a fitness center that you can go to and start walking on the treadmill, and just trying to make it interesting for yourself.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Thank you.
Next we have Jose.
Jose from Ohio. Welcome.
Yes. Thank you. Taylin, thank you for that remarkable. I mean, you are great. And, you know, I joined the Marine Corps in 1973, 18 years old. And my first marathon was the Marine Corps Marathon.
Oh,
and
amazing.
They called it the People's, they called it the People's Marathon. You probably heard that before, the People's Marathon.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I had my vision, I was running like one marathon and 3 half marathons a year. Now, I lost my vision because of glaucoma, August of 2015.
Mm-hmm.
And so my first half marathon being blind was, May of 2016 here in, 2016 here in Uber Heights. And then in 2019, I did qualify for the Boston Marathon with Team Red, White, and Blue. I'm sure you heard of Team Red, White, and Blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. So they're the ones. I had a 5-team member. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Caitlin, to qualify for Boston as a blind runner, I had to run under 5 hours. Is that still the qualifications for a blind runner for Boston, you think?
Yeah, so there's two things. So there is a the Boston Marathon is really one of the best marathons, I would say, for people who are blind and visually impaired, because they do have a qualifying standard. So like Jose is saying, so it's 5 hours. So if you run Yeah. So if you run a sub-5-hour marathon, that is one way to qualify for Boston as a blind and visually impaired runner. And then, like I said, if you are looking into becoming a para athlete as well, which is a different qualifying standard, and that varies from year to year. But that's another option. Yeah.
Yes. And the team that, was going to run with me in Boston was a team in training.
Nice.
So that was great. So maybe, you know, I pray, Caitlin, that one of these days I will meet you in person, maybe not this year at the convention, but maybe next year.
Well, maybe we'll run a race together sometime.
Yes, that sounds good. Maybe you could come down in September to do the Air Force.
Ooh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll talk about it some other time.
Okay.
Take care, Caitlin.
Yeah, you too, Jose.
And remember,
thanks, Jose.
And remember to run your race.
Yes.
Yes.
Good job.
Okay, bye.
All right, take care, Jose. Trish, what
Jose sounds speedy over there. Very cool.
Trish?
Next we have Allie.
Hello, Allie.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Hi, Caitlin. I heard you talked about being in the Paralympics. So how did you go about finding about it? For me, I used to be in sports before I lost, my eyesight, and, I sound pretty young because I'm in the younger age, but, after I lost my eyesight, I only did kayak once, but I also do swimming before too, but, I wanted to get into the Paralympics. I was able to get a hold of someone and they said that the person in charge of the Paralympics would get back to me, and they never did. And the thing is that they also told me that, traveling, I would have to come up with the traveling costs, because for them to do any training, I would have to travel 3 to 6 hours or even 7 hours away from where I currently live. And for me, what's holding me back is the traveling cost and hotel cost, stuff like that.
Yeah. What's your sport, Allie?
I swim and I love to kayak.
Cool. Yeah. So I don't know. It really, with the Paralympics, it really seems to be determined by sport. Like, I know some people who do, goalball and are going to be at the LA Paralympics. And they got involved with goalball through their team, through whatever their local team was. And then they were recruited to be part of the Paralympic team. So I don't know, for instance, with swimming, how.
Or even kayak.
Yeah,
I'm in California, but LA is about 3 or 4 hours away. But if someone is going to tell me go all the way to San Diego instead of beginning of LA, that's like, instead of being 3 or 4 hours, that's like 6 or 7 hours for me with traffic, if I could get a ride over there.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, one thing about Paralympics is it is very competitive. The, you know, Paralympians are, you know, people say it is parallel to the Olympics, but Paralympians are, competing at, you know, at an elite level. So like I said, it really depends on the sport. I didn't know, for running until, the fall that I had a qualifying time or anything like that. And so it feels kind of, it really is because there's not a lot of, blind marathon runners. That's the reason for me. With swimming, it could be completely different. So unfortunately, I don't have information about that, but I would say the first thing is to see if you can find what's local to you, what's close to you. If there's a team or, you know, someone that you can start swimming with, or maybe it's even like your local Y and, you know, swimming there. And then, you know, going, starting from there, and that person might be able to tell you how to connect, with, you know, a Paralympic team. Cause yeah, swimming seems to be a little bit different than running.
Was able to connect with someone with the Paralympics, but they told me to travel all the way to LA.
Wow. Yeah. And that is a huge barrier, right? Like that's one of the other things that we, that is a problem as well, right? There's a cost to participating in a lot of these sports, and that can also be quite prohibitive. So, you know, another thing I would say is, you know, with vision loss, there's sometimes, like I was saying, there's an experience of loss, but there's often also sometimes new opportunities that you don't know about. So for instance, goalball is something that people who are blind and visually impaired can compete in that I didn't even know was a sport until, you know, becoming more involved with the blind community. So there might be opportunities for you to participate in some other sports that you maybe haven't considered before.
How about beatball?
Beatball or, tennis. What else? Oh, we were saying, well, there's all these other sports that are out there that might appeal. I don't know, like where you're at in California, you might find, you know, the perfect team to swim with that, that is able to help you with those resources or maybe even fundraising. So it really kind of depends regionally on what's available to you.
And, thank you. And then do you know anywhere regarding, kayak for Paralympics, or you're not sure?
I don't know, but that, I mean, that sounds really cool. I love kayaking as well. I don't know much about, kayaking on that level, but that sounds really, that'd be cool to look into.
There should be a USABA somewhere in California. I know they do kayaking. It might be worth a phone call to find out if there's a regional something nearby you, or they might be able to put you in touch with somebody. Cause I know they do kayaking because I kayaked with them last summer. So.
Oh, so cool.
Yeah. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Allie.
And you did that in Oregon?
Yes, we did it. We did it in Portland, actually. In the Portland area. And it was great. They're very supportive. I had never kayaked before. And they put me in a solo kayak, which is a major mistake. but it was fun. And, but if I do it again, I'm going to go on a double kayak because somebody can actually steer and I could just paddle and not have to worry about going around in circles all the time. But it was fun. I had a very good time. And, so I know that they do kayaking and it might be worth a phone call to see if they could help you with something.
That's a great resource.
Thank you very much, Allie, for your participation. Trish, do we have any other hands raised? We have about another 6 or 7 minutes to go.
We do. Angel is next.
Angel, welcome.
The question I want to ask you, Caitlin, is do you use Braille maps or something so that way that you will know which route that you're running in? Like, for example, the New York City Marathon, let's say it starts in the Verrazano Bridge and basically all the signs are basically contracted in Braille. In UEB, of course. Do you use like Braille maps or someone helps you say, okay, we're going to the Verrazano Bridge, or this is start line, I'll wait for the gun. Does somebody tell you, okay, what is going to happen in that schedule, or you just know what is going to happen?
Angel, it sounds like you know the New York City Marathon really well, because you're right. It does start on the Verrazano Bridge in Staten Island.
It does start on the Verrazano Bridge, and then it goes to all the other places and ends in Central Park.
That's right.
Tabbing on the green.
Yes. Okay. Wow. Okay. New York City Marathon expert here. I haven't used Braille maps before, or any kind of tactile map, to be honest. But I love that. And have you used them before?
No, actually, I have used them at Lavelle School of the Blind, but not for things like that. Only for mobility instruction. Mobility instruction one-on-one, but not really for actual travel, just to practice. Just to practice, basically, in the school.
I mean, that's something, you know, the New York City Marathon is one of the most spectated marathons in the world. And that would be a really cool thing for them to incorporate Braille maps for and, not just for participants, but also for spectators to be able to follow along. Yeah.
And you know what else, Kaylin, the New York City Marathon, for those of you that don't know that are listening live at the podcast, is on the first Sunday in November. So I would love for you to participate in New York City Marathon if you have not done so. That would be so special.
And it is a really incredible race. I was able to participate in it before I worked there, and I loved it. It's amazing.
Thank you, Angel.
Thank you so much. All right. Trish?
Next is Nora.
Nora?
Hi.
Yes.
I'm doing great. What is your name? I want to thank you for your presentation. And did you ever thought about wanting to run when you were still a small child, or did you start that interested as an adult?
Yeah. So as a child, I did track and cross country, and I was the slowest kid. And it wasn't just because of, my eyesight. It was also, I just didn't have much confidence. If I was running faster than another kid and it was between me and this other kid to come in last, I would say, go ahead. I got this. I would come in last every race. I just didn't have much confidence in my athletic ability. I didn't see myself as a runner. My dad says he always talks about how I would be on the sidelines and it would be time for my event and I would be, French braiding somebody's hair or just not paying attention at all. So I liked being at the event, but I didn't enjoy running yet, and I didn't learn to enjoy that until I was an adult. So I think there's time to grow into something or to take on a new sport or become passionate about something later in life, for sure.
Gail and I have a story to share. I went to my first and only Ski for Light event a while back. And at the end, they have sort of a race, where you ski 5 kilometers or whatever it is. And, I was terrible. I was a terrible skier. I kept falling. I had no, I never really got the hang of it. I had a great volunteer who was very supportive. So my goal sort of was to finish in last place in the event just because, it seemed like a valuable goal, and I failed. I did not finish in last place. I don't know where I finished, but I did not finish in last place.
It's an interesting goal.
Well, the final finisher, for instance, at the New York City Marathon, there's a huge celebration for the final finisher who comes through. So now it's really celebrated. Back in the 80s and 90s when I first started running, not celebrated as much, but now we celebrate final finishers. So I love that tradition.
Yeah, well, it was just funny. Any other hands raised?
We don't have any other hands, but I would like to ask a quick question if I could.
Yes, Trish, go ahead.
Okay, so, Caitlin, I've heard the statement before that, a fast walk or a fast jog is just as good as running. What do you think about that statement? Do you agree?
Yeah, I think that it can be. I mean, I think the most important thing is, doing what you can, starting where you're at. I love running, but also I don't think that running is the only way to be fit. Or, I think that whatever you're going to do consistently, whatever you find joy in is going to be the best thing to do. Obviously for heart health, for some people, it's going to be going for a run, and for other people, it's going to be going for a walk. I'm not an absolutist in those things. And I love walking so much. I love walking. I don't think running is, necessarily the number one thing. I mean, if I'm traveling, I love to go for a long walk, and I'll often take time off running so I can just walk more.
And with that, I think we are out of time. It's been a fast show. Caitlin, congratulations again for the great things that you are doing for yourself as an athlete, for the marathons that you work for, and also for the ACB. Caitlin Lee, ladies and gentlemen, has been a guest on In Perspective. And keep up the good work.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Thanks everybody else. And go safe with God's abundant blessings, everyone. I'm Bob Branco. He's Peter Altschul. Take care, everybody. Have a great week.
You are listening to Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network.